I am Heather Clark Hammond, and I am a junior from Willits High. I'm here tonight to open some doors. I want you, the youth, to see what is going on in our government and how we can make a difference. The first step in this revolution is to get educated about what's going on in the government. I interviewed Norm Roman, the district attorney, because we need to learn the system before we can act on it. Understanding the laws on a local level will bring us a step closer to understanding the laws on a national level, such as the anti-terrorism laws and the Patriot Act. So here is the interview with Norm Roman. Is it against the Constitution or the law to allow the CIA and the FBI the ability to tap phone lines and access the internet and email records of anyone out of the ordinary?
Probably. Probably. But having said that, so what? There are a lot of laws that are unconstitutional, but until you work your way all the way up to the Supreme Court and the Supreme Court rules on it, they may or may not be unconstitutional, but they're still enforced. And obviously, the Constitution doesn't give anybody any rights.
Okay.
It protects the citizens from the government. And it enumerates rights that were there before they wrote the Constitution. All the Constitution is saying is these are your rights and we want them put down so the government doesn't forget about them.
Isn't this violating some rights of the Constitution, like privacy? Isn't there anything outlined in the Constitution about privacy?
I don't think the word privacy is specifically mentioned per se in the Constitution. There are a lot of rights that are enumerated, like speech and to be safe in your home from unreasonable search and seizures, and the right not to incriminate yourself.
And they don't go off of any probable cause. There's no need for probable cause in order to investigate or tap phone lines and everything like that. What do you think of this?
Oh, I think it stinks. I don't like it at all. But, you know, it's typical of a government to be oppressive of its citizens. And this government is no different. All governments are the same.
It seems that civil rights and are diminishing and police investigation is increasing or government power is increasing. Where do you think we are in this trend? The beginning, the middle, or the end?
We're not at the beginning, so we must be either in the middle and approaching the end. But I don't know where it's going to go unless you got to look at history. If you look at history, there's nothing new under the sun except history you haven't read.
Yeah.
Why does the government keep trying to oppress the people?
Yeah.
That's the natural function of a government, to oppress the people. And what you're seeing now is a government that does not trust the citizens. I'm for a matriarchal society. I would like to see the ladies put back in charge of the country. I know at one time in our history we were a matriarchal society.
We were?
Yes, a long time ago. You wouldn't remember it and I wouldn't remember it, but as far as I'm concerned, the women are more nurturing and more peace-loving than men, and we probably wouldn't have any wars if we had all the women running the country.
Well, that is good. Well, it's a good thing that maybe I'm considering this course then. Do you consider the youth of the United States sheltered from what's going on with the government?
Well, not sheltered, but, you know, in your own school, you can see on a local level, there are some people that are interested in it and some people that aren't.
Right.
And I think that just amplifies that the larger you get, it becomes a smaller minority of people that are taking an interest in what's going on and are asking questions. The majority of people are happy to go along fat, dumb, and happy, and as long as it doesn't affect them directly, they don't care what happens.
What do you think the future of the U.S., or what do you think that our aim, our path right now is headed toward?
I think the United States will fall as a world power.
Okay, that's what I think too.
Well, you look at history. Every country that's been a world power stays up there for a while, and then it evolved to someone else.
A lot of people that I talk to, they're like, well, it's okay, you know, we can just wait it out, and everything comes, like, turns out fine in the long run. How do we change these people's minds?
You don't.
Then how do we make the action so that we don't fall, or, like, that we change our course so that we don't, like, go off the edge? Why can't we take a left turn or a right turn?
Because there are too few people like you. There are too few thinking people. The price of liberty, now I'm not talking about freedom. Freedom's something different than liberty.
Right.
The price of liberty is eternal vigilance. And I don't know who said that, but some guy smarter than I. And I think it was Thomas Jefferson said that the tree of liberty needs to be fertilized with the blood of patriots. And that means if you think something is good and you want to stand up for it, you better be willing to give your life for it.
What do you think of patriotism now? I mean, we see all these flags and everything, and that's what I think the definition of patriotism is.
It's almost overdone at this point. Everywhere I turn now, there's a flag, or somebody's wearing a flag on their lapel, because it's the thing to do. But I think that the majority of people that do this are copycats, and they don't really have any thought as to why am I wearing a flag in my lapel, and why am I flying a flag on my car? What am I trying to say?
What about the laws like the Patriot Act or just like anti-terrorist laws? Because now we see that anybody of like Arab descent or anybody that has, you know, any sort of like inkling of relation to someone from Afghanistan or anything like that is totally discriminated against or under suspicion. What do you think this is teaching the youth of today?
Well, what do you think it taught the youth of the 40s when we locked up all the Japanese American citizens in concentration camps? What do you think it said to all the youth when we made treaties with the Native Americans and then broke them left and right? There's nothing new happening. It's just different people doing it.
Yeah.
We are not in a position to stand up and say we're holier than thou. All you got to do is look at our history and see how we have abused people left and right. And now we stand up and say, oh, well, China needs to more enforce their human rights. Well, look at yourself before you try and straighten somebody else out.
What do you think of our country preaching equal rights if we don't really have...
Well, I think we ought to practice them before we preach them.
Is this a time to worry about privacy rights and civil rights?
Every time is a time to be concerned about your rights to privacy and your personal rights. I mean, there's no good time or bad time. It's all the time. Like I said, the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. You've got to be vigilant. It's like the frog in the pan of boiling water. If you put a frog in water that's cold and turn the heat on and it slowly heats up, he'll stay right there and die. If you put a frog, drop a frog in boiling water, he'll hop right out. So what I'm trying to say is, if you slowly erode the rights of people, pretty soon you wake up and you say, whoa, I got no rights left.
So how do you go about doing that? I mean, how do we just...
Local, okay. In your local town, in doing local things. Go to this. How many, have you been to city council meetings?
No.
Why not?
Because I didn't know, I don't know when they are, and I don't know about
You don't know when they are.
And
don't
I don't
you
know
think
about
it's your
them.
Obligation to
yes,
find out
to
when
find
they
out,
are?
But I didn't know that we could go to those things.
Those are the people that are running your community.
Oh.
Have you ever been to a board of supervisors meeting?
No.
Why not?
Because I didn't know I could go. See? So how do I make sure that everybody knows about these things? And
well,
and
the first thing you got to figure out is how do you make yourself know about
okay.
it?
Okay. So how do I know?
Once you figure that out, then you can tell somebody else to know.
So how do I know about the supervisor meetings? And
well, I call the clerk of the board. Now I can tell you the supervisors meet every Tuesday.
In Willits or in Ukiah?
No, in Ukiah. And you can call the city clerk of the city of Willits and find out when their city council meetings. They're required by law to post their agenda.
If I go to those meetings, will I have some say in
Certainly.
What's going on?
You can stand up and say, hey, wait a minute, I don't like that.
Ooh. Okay.
But you can't do that unless you know what they're talking
okay.
about. And you can't just go to one meeting. You've
right.
got to go to them. You got to go to them regularly because it's a continuum flow of stuff that's going on. But they have a direct impact on your daily life. The government has just got such a death grip on the citizens because they don't trust them. And of course, when I say a government doesn't trust the people, why in the hell should the people trust the government?
I don't trust the government.
Oh, it's a good plan.
But how can like everybody else be so comfortable with the government when they...
When you don't know about something, you're very blissful. The majority of people in the United States are ignorant of what's going on, and therefore they're very blissful. And when you try to ring a bell and say, hey, wake up,
they don't
wake
want
up,
to.
Look what's going on around you. Oh, no, no. Sky's not falling.
Do you think that the U.S. has potential to be a dictatorship?
Oh, sure. Sure does.
Well, okay, so everything has potential.
We're almost
in
a police state now, in case you hadn't noticed.
Yeah. How far away is it?
I don't know. It's as far away as nobody paying any attention. The frog in the slowly heating up water. When it happens, it'll be too late.
So can we use our freedom of speech and everything to inform people about that?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. But you need to watch on a local level. You need to watch what your city council is doing. You need to watch what the board of supervisors are doing. The only one you have any control and direction over is you.
Okay.
And you can do what you feel is right. And my attitude has always been, I put my head down, I think I know what's right, and I do what I think is right. That will please some and astonish the rest. And that's, again, not a quote originally with me. Mark Twain said that. Always do right, you'll please a few and astonish all the rest of them. But that's all you can do. I can't control what he does or right. what you do, other than by doing what I do, and you see me doing it and say, that looks pretty good, so maybe I better do it too. So it's by example. If you're unaware, you're fair game. I mean, anybody can come along and you're very pliable if you're unaware. If you're aware and you're aware, you're going to question everything everybody tells you. And particularly anything anybody from the government trying to tell you anything. You see all this stuff going on around you and you're saying, you want to take people and just shake them and say, you dumb fool, don't you see what's going on? And they'll say, get lost, you know, what are you uptight about? And they don't see it. They can't see it. I don't know that they don't see it, but they can't see it.
Yeah, and I just see it in, like, everyone and everything with judgment and how people are so afraid of everything, like, anything out of the norm, anything, like, just walking down the street, you'll see it. People are too afraid to say hello to each other or just, like, good evening. It's like, oh my gosh, there's a person coming. Like, hide the purse, you know? Yes. It's just, there's too much fear.
Well, fear runs the world. If you want to know what runs the world, it's fear.
What is acceptance? I don't understand what acceptance is.
Well, if you're secure in yourself, you don't care about acceptance. It's very acceptable to appear to be patriotic, to have a flag on everything, to wear a flag on your lapel. That's real acceptable right now. There's a story going around. A Frenchman's written a story about how the possibility that the whole September 11th thing was staged.
Yeah, so that we could go get oil.
By the military and industrial complex.
Seriously.
And people say, are you crazy? That's not that far-fetched.
No, it's not at all. And, I mean, things coming up now about how we knew, like, 2 years prior and everything, to the fact that they had a plan or whatever. I mean, I know that might be all hocus-pocus or whatever.
But we don't
really know. And, like, it's just, like, I really feel that our government has ulterior motives in doing the things that they do.
Is that so?
Yes.
How did you ever form that opinion?
I don't know, because, I mean, we're all about wealth, and those other countries have wealthy things like oil and, you know, fossil fuels.
And we want them.
Yes, and yeah, exactly. And we'll do anything, even kill millions of people, which is sick.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh. But it is. That's what it is right now.
How can we declare war on terrorism? You know what I mean?
Well, how can we declare war on drugs?
We can't.
Well, we did.
How did we do that?
No, don't you hear him talking about, there's a war on drugs.
What?
I said, what are you talking about?
What
I
does
said,
war mean then?
Well,
I mean.
Yeah.
I don't.
But that's
just
a catchy phrase. You know, we're going to declare a war on drugs. Well, if there's
so it's
a war
a fight
on drugs.
For...
Yeah. If there is a war on drugs, we lost. And we haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah, and we'll never win because, no. I mean...
And a war on terrorism? Does that mean we don't like terrorism?
And how can we only classify that terrorists' actions are only from Afghanistan and things like that? I mean, isn't that unjust to do that?
Well, yeah, but then you have to define what you mean by terrorist.
Yeah, see? They didn't do that. They automatically jumped to the conclusion.
No, but because this is a catchy phrase. Everybody's opposed to terrorism
because
you think
terror.
Of terrorism. Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And that's a good thing to stomp out. So they come up with these catchy phrases. A war on terrorism, a war on drugs. I don't think you can have freedom without liberty. Freedom just means that you have the ability to make choices. Without the liberty to make those choices, you have nothing.
And so our country has liberty, but no other country?
I don't think we have much liberty anymore. I don't think we have much freedom anymore, because look at your Patriot Acts. Look at all the laws. Laws are being passed. If you look at the laws that are being passed anywhere by any legislative body, and then ask the question, what is this law designed to do? Why are we passing this law? And I'll submit to you that the majority of laws are passed now so a legislator can get his name on a piece of legislation that he can go back to his constituents and say, oh, look what I've done. And somebody will say, well, you know.
How is that relevant?
How does that help me? And they pass nonsensical laws. And you ask them, you've passed this law. What is it you're trying to accomplish? And I don't think one of them can tell you.
Right.
Because, as I said at the beginning, only law-abiding citizens obey the laws. And laws do not prevent crime. They never have. The district attorney, the job that I hold, is probably the most powerful person in your community. The most powerful person in the state. There are 34 million people in the state of California. You know how many DAs there are? 58. Just 58 of us. And there are 2,000 judges in the state of California. But no judge ever sees a case unless a DA files it.
So what exactly do you do? Like, how does...
I'm the one that has the discretion to say, we're going to enforce this law and we're not going to enforce this one.
Oh. In our community or...
In this county.
Okay.
But every DA has that power. So that's why I'm telling you, your local politicians or the local people that are in that you voted to give control of your community are the most important ones.
Definitely.
You know, all the people that are over in the legislature, they pass all the laws they want. If I choose not to enforce them, well, then what's going to happen? Huh. I have to set priorities. The constitutional mandate for a district attorney is that I'm to investigate crime and prosecute crimes. So that leaves me all sorts of discretion as to what crimes get prosecuted and what don't.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of crimes would you say should be prosecuted?
All those crimes that are crimes against people and property. And then if I have time left over, then I will prosecute the victimless crimes. So you've got to set priorities, and the DAs are the ones that set the priorities. And not many people understand that. Not many people know that. Now, I don't send anybody to jail. That's the judge's job. But I'm the one that puts the case in front of the judge.
Oh.
He never gets a case except what I file.
Well, this is good to know. Just being more knowledgeable of everything, like the whole system of government and system of everything that goes down.
Well, they don't teach you that in school, do they?
Not really. No.
No, they don't teach you anything about the history of your country in terms of why these things happen. There are no practical courses in schools now that you know, I would say, you got a local government class?
No.
You don't sit in the classroom and read about it. You go down to the Board of Supervisors. You go to the city council chambers and you see what happens. The only way you can find out what local government is to see it in action.
Definitely.
And ask questions. And have people from the local government come in and talk to your class. Have a DA come in and talk to your half. Have a police chief come in and talk to your class. Have these people come in and talk to your class and explain to them what they do.
I really, really want to say thank you for being here today.
Fine.
And I've gained so much knowledge about everything. And just to everyone out there, I hope that this has been really informative, because this is the stuff we need to concentrate on and be willing to look at everything, you know. Don't just go off of the first glimpse. Dig into those things out there and... Hopefully you'll find out what's
going on. Well, I invite
you
down to my office. Call up, come down, and watch what goes on in a courtroom. See what the DA does. See what the judges do.
Let's participate in what's going on in our local government. And
sure. Come to court before you have to.
Ooh, maybe I'll do that. I've been wanting to. But yeah, it's just, this is the time that we need to start, you know, being active and taking the responsibility into our hands if we want our country to be a success and to go places. So let's do it.
Hello, my name is Marie Pence, and I'm going to do an interview with Tony Craver, Sheriff Tony Craver. The subject being substances, youth, and the law. And it's going to be about youth using substances and how the law relates to youth and the current changing drug laws in Mendocino County. What problems do your sheriff see in relation to youth and drugs.
Well, I'm not sure, Marie. I know how you're asking and what context that question is in. Are you asking about what drugs are they using, or what are the problems that are caused by kids using drugs?
What problems are caused by?
Well, the drugs? Problems that we encounter from young folks using drugs are, of course, behavioral issues. You know, absenteeism at school, falling grade, problems with their parents, problems in the home. Other criminal activity, usually vandalism or something like that, that occurs when some kids are high and they're less inhibited than they ordinarily would be. Their judgment's impaired, so they'll go out and they'll do something like smash the windows out of somebody's car, or slash all the tires, or do other things like knock down a bunch of road signs or mailboxes or whatever.
What drugs do you see generally causing these problems?
Well, and of course, keep in mind that I consider alcohol to be a drug. I think the most common we find is alcohol and marijuana. And marijuana, some people call it a drug, some people consider it an herb. We consider it, in law enforcement, we consider it to be a drug, a prohibited substance. It depends on the various areas of the county. We find some methamphetamine, and that's predominant on the 101 corridor. Over on the coast, we're liable to find LSD over there. We find mushrooms and cocaine.
Are the problems with drugs uniform around the county, or do they change in different areas?
Well, they change in different areas, and they change with the times, and it depends on whatever influence. And again, I don't know what those external influences are. Somebody will come into a community, and they'll go to a party, and they introduce a drug. Maybe it might be ecstasy. And so then everybody wants ecstasy. It depends on what the source, what's available. Some kids steal drugs from their parents. It depends on what's available.
What do you think the role of education is in preventing abuse or reducing abuse?
Well, I think, first of all, it has a very, very significant or very important role. And I think that the role should probably be more geared towards the physiological effects of the use of drugs, the behavioral issues, the consequences of that, as opposed to the plain old just say no to drug stuff.
What kind of resources are out there for addicted teens or teens who are just using drugs?
I have to say that I'm somewhat limited in that. Because what happens when we arrest a teen or a youthful offender, if you will, for some sort of substance abuse, they get referred to probation. Now, probation has a whole list of resources that they use, and I have to admit that I give my apologies to the effect that I just don't know exactly what all they are.
How do you define substance use or abuse?
Substance abuse? Well, of course, any use of a controlled substance. Controlled substances are defined by law. There's a specific list of drugs, if you will, or substances that are prohibited by law. The use of those drugs are prohibited by law. So that's how I define that. If somebody's using something and the law says you can't use it, then it's basically prohibited drug use. When we use the term abuse, it's kind of a generic term that fits all. We find abuse is the act of somebody taking prohibited drugs to excess, to the point where it causes them to do something else. Like I talked about, kids that may get all whacked out on maybe a little grass and alcohol or something like that, or acid, and then go out and they do a lot of damage to somebody else's property. That's not only substance use, that's substance abuse. It's kind of a contradiction of terms, or it's a curious use of terms, because it doesn't seem to matter. I mean, if it's prohibited, it's prohibited. So anytime you use something that's prohibited, essentially you're abusing the system.
What steps are being taken to limit minors using legal drugs like alcohol and cigarettes?
Well, of course, alcohol, in terms of the minors using that, alcohol is not a legal drug for minors. Alcohol is prohibited for minors to use, and cigarettes as well. We rely pretty much on the vendors of these items to regulate the sale of those items. We check from time to time. The Alcoholic Beverage Control, for example, does what they call sting operations, where they get a young person to go into a liquor store or a grocery store or whatever and attempt to buy alcohol to see whether or not they're successful in doing so. Our actions in terms of what we do in law enforcement is more reactive than proactive. We find you know, some kid driving down the street or a group of kids out hanging around someplace, and we stop to see what's going on, and we find out they have alcohol, and so we, you know, we'll make the appropriate arrest.
What actions are taken towards youth if they're caught with drugs?
Well, there's a, you know, there's a variety of things that can happen. Generally, if you want to talk in terms of the ultimate outcome of this, or if you're talking about step by step, what do we do? I'm not sure. Your question is a little vague. So talking in terms of the ultimate outcome, it could be anything from some time in juvenile hall. It could be, if this is an aggravated situation, maybe a sentence to the California Youth Authority. It could be, for example, a loss of your driving privileges for a year. It could be a number of different things.
Are the punishments different for simple possession or with intent to sell?
I think, yeah. Oh, absolutely. It depends on whether, as you say, whether it's for simple possession for personal consumption or whether it's for possession for sales. And another thing that would aggravate that would be how much use there's, prior use there's been. Make an arrest of a youthful offender for possession of drugs or alcohol, they're referred to the juvenile probation department. Juvenile probation department has a very, very, very long memory. They don't forget. Once you're in their books, they know what you've done before, and the punishment or the corrective steps that are going to be taken are going to be based on a number of things, which would include how many times you've done this in the past and what your history is, how sophisticated you are, how badly you're abusing these drugs.
In your opinion, what is the most dangerous drug that you see around the county?
Well, I would have to say alcohol because it's the most prevalent. But I think in terms of the actual use, it's really hard to say. I don't have the experience in, like, for example, what is this one? It's GHB, which is the date rape drug. Now, that's a pretty significant drug. If you being a young woman and you go out on a date with a guy and he puts this in, you know, in your Coke or whatever, in your soft drink, and you don't know it's there. The next thing you know, you wake up the next day and you've been raped and whatnot. That's a pretty significant crime. That's a crime that's going to have an impact on you for a long time. So that's a very dangerous drug. The problem with the drugs, and of course methamphetamine, because people really get out of control when they're heavily spun out on meth. But the problem, what makes all these drugs dangerous, is that these drugs are not manufactured by some pharmaceutical laboratory someplace under good clinical conditions. They're made in somebody's garage. They're made in somebody's bathroom or a kitchen or whatever. At one point, you might get, for example, an acid tab, an LSD tab that has, let's say, a value of 1 in terms of potency, and the next one you get may have a value of 100. So you may take have a dozen of these things and take 10 of them that have a value of 1, and it has a certain effect on you. The next one you take with a value of 100, it's going to blow you completely out of your mind. So we see a lot of people stumbling around the jails, the mental health facilities on the streets and whatnot, that are totally burned out. Their brains are totally scrambled because they've used excessive drugs. And when you get involved in these drugs, especially street drugs, you just don't know what's happening because you don't know what's in them.
You can't be sure of the purity at all.
Absolutely not. Or the strength.
What is the difference between the federal, state, and county laws involving marijuana?
Well, essentially, the federal law just generally prohibits, the federal law and the state law are very closely parallel. They both generally prohibit the use of marijuana. We don't enforce federal law. We're state officers, so we enforce state laws. DEA, the Drug Enforcement Agency, they enforce the state laws, U.S. Customs, and a number of the federal agencies. So we enforce state laws, and they run very parallel to the federal laws. The county laws essentially would be Measure G, because that's new to come along, and essentially that's not really a law. That has no effect whatsoever, because where you have a state law that prohibits the use of marijuana, the possession, cultivation of marijuana for personal use, you can't come along with a county ordinance and change that. A county ordinance can't displace state law. So state law has to prevail. So essentially there's no county law, even though there is this ordinance that was adopted by the voters as a ballot measure. It has no validity in terms of enforcement purposes. Wouldn't be a valid defense in court. You couldn't go into court and be exonerated from growing marijuana or possessing marijuana simply because you said Measure G said it was okay.
So Measure G doesn't really change the law?
No, it doesn't change the law. It sends a statement. It makes a message. I think the message is very important. You know, I supported Measure G mainly because I feel it's very important for people to have a voice in the laws. I think the referendum initiative policy, I should say, not the referendum, but the initiative procedure is a very important tool of democracy. And, you know, I was supportive of the people's right to make themselves heard. I think it's very important. I think that people around the nation need to state clearly how they feel about this thing. You know, I've talked to a lot of people over the years about the marijuana issue. It's a hot topic in Mendocino County. It always has been. And it probably always will be. People are basically fall into two categories on this thing. People that use marijuana and find that they believe it to be harmless and they'd like to see it legalized. People who don't use marijuana but think that the time and money that's spent into dealing with the marijuana issue is a waste, has been wasted, that it doesn't achieve anything. And then, of course, the other faction of people are people who are dead set against it and will never budge one way, you know, never budge. It'll always be evil to them. So clearly there's a division in Mendocino County, quite obviously, as a result of not only Measure G, but Proposition 215, the medical marijuana initiative that went through 4 years ago. The message was very clear from the Mendocino County that the majority of the voters in Mendocino County are in favor of the use of marijuana.
Do you think incarceration is an effective form of rehabilitation?
Well, I think, yes, it is. And I tell you why I say that. Because I don't think you can force rehabilitation on anybody. A person has to want to change. People that smoke and want to quit have to want to quit. People that drink and want to quit, they have to want to quit. They have to have the inner desire to quit, whether it's using drugs, whether you're overweight, such as I am, and you need to go on a diet. You have to have the inner motivation. Nothing external can make that happen. Now, sometimes putting a person in jail where they can sit there and they can say, you know, I got myself into this by using these drugs, and as soon as I get out of jail, I'm going to go out there and get into a program such as NA or AA or a combination thereof and find the strength and the help that I need to quit using drugs. But that has to come from within. That can't be forced on them by the court. The court can say, well, they can force him into a rehabilitation program where they have to go to classes and whatnot. But unless they have the inner desire to quit using drugs, the court, nobody, I'm not empowered to do this. Nobody's empowered to impose that will on somebody. They have to have the, it has to be inner motivation or self-motivation.
Do you think a zero tolerance policy concerning drugs and teens is a fair thing?
Well, by zero tolerance, if you mean that we shouldn't look the other way when we find people do it, that they should be made to answer for using the drugs, I would say yes. Zero tolerance, I think, is good. One of the things that happens in teens is that teens have a sense of immortality. I could tell the average teenager, listen, if you did a particular thing every day for a month, but in 10 years, your right arm would fall off, and there's scientific proof that that's going to happen. That particular teenager would probably say, no, that won't happen to me, and they'll go ahead and do whatever they're going to do. And they never worry about the consequences, what's going to happen to them 10 years down the road. Also, we have teens are developing very rapidly. They're experiencing in a very short period of time, and you're a senior in high school. Think about the changes that you've undergone in the last 4 years. You go from, playing jump rope, hopscotch, things like that, to virtually thinking about what you're going to do to create a life for yourself in the world and how you're going to be able to contribute to society. You go through a huge number of changes in a very short period of time. So sometimes these changes happen so fast that you don't really have a chance to catch up with yourself. So you don't have the judgment to fall back on that maybe somebody that's been experimenting with drugs, say, for 10 or 15 years, So the consequences, I think, of kids using drugs should be brought to their attention. I think that I'm not suggesting that we should throw the book at every kid that's using drugs and punish them severely. I'm not suggesting that at all. I'm just saying we shouldn't overlook it, that that when a kid is found to be in possession of drugs or using drugs, somebody somewhere along the line at one level or another needs to sit down with that person and discuss this whole thing and talk it all through, what the consequences are, what's happening to their bodies, what risks they're taking, and the things that we've talked about so far.
How have the drug laws in Mendocino County changed over the years, or have they?
Well, I other than the fact that, you know, years ago when I first started in law enforcement, we'd stop somebody and we'd see a couple of marijuana seeds on the floorboards of the car. We'd arrest them and take them to jail. And, 15, 20 years ago or so, they changed the law so that now amounts of marijuana, we no longer arrest them and take them to jail. We simply give them a citation, anything less than an ounce, if that's the only thing involved. So that's one thing. Now, that happened quite a while back. I don't think that there's been a lot of significant changes in the years. I mean, the drugs that are being used have changed. The way we go about finding people, the effort we put into it, 20 years ago, you didn't have near the meth problem that you've got now. I mean, the closest you came to meth problems was, you know, a few truck drivers would take amphetamines to stay awake on the road. Women were taking diet pills and things like that. But in terms of people using the drugs recreationally, like at the level they use them today, where they become addicted and it kind of takes over their life, that we didn't see that then.
Do you think drugs like ecstasy are a problem in this county?
Well, they are a problem in the county. And one of the problems with ecstasy is that, first of all, again, it's a clandestine drug. Ecstasy has two effects on a person. First of all, it has a tendency to speed up your metabolism, your central nervous system, the same way that methamphetamine does. And also, it has a hallucinogenic effect on you. And again, these are two things that will impair your judgment. If you're driving a car, for example, and you're under the influence of ecstasy, it's like, you know, playing some fast rock music in the car. If you're concentrating on the music, you look down at your speedometer, you find yourself doing 70 miles an hour, and you don't even realize how fast you're going. So it's the same thing on speed. You can find yourself, going down on ecstasy with the effect that it has, the speeding up effect. Driving a car, for example, at excessive speed and then having hallucinations about what may or may not be on the road. It could be very dangerous. Again, we go back to what I said before. You know, you don't know what's in this drug or who made it. You might find somebody that's selling you something you think is ecstasy and you take it, and it could be something entirely different. So these are very dangerous things.
What generally do sheriffs do when they encounter something like a party?
Well, the first thing you try to do is you try to find out who's responsible, who's having the party. Of course, you want to break the party up. You want to get it going, depending on what the party's all about. You know, I mean, it's okay to have a party. It's not okay to drink when you're having a party or do drugs. But unfortunately, that seems to be happening in a lot of parties. So we want to find out who's responsible for the party. We want to find out how many of the people who are at the party are underaged. How many of the underage people are drinking? We want to notify their parents that, hey, your kids are out here drinking. And if you find them under the influence, we can't just leave them there. We have to, you know, we're responsible. We establish what's called a special relationship. When we go to a party, we find a kid that's just absolutely smashed, absolutely clobbered. Now, we're responsible for the welfare of that young person. And so it's our responsibility to see that person is either put in juvenile hall or safely turned over to their parents. So we have to do that. Obviously, if there's a bunch of teenagers there that are under teenagers, and they're drinking, to seize the alcohol, to confiscate the alcohol as contraband. So, people that we see drinking, we will attempt to cite those people to juvenile probation. If there's adults there, we will arrest them for contributing to the delinquency of minors. There's times when, quite truthfully, the parties are large enough, and some of the kids have been down this road before, we see them, but by the time we get to them, since two or three deputies go out there and there's 200 or 300 kids or 100 kids, half of them are gone by the time we get around to them. So, I mean, there's no surprise there.
Do you hold the people who are throwing the party legally responsible?
Yeah. Yes, we do.
And not just the individuals?
Well, both. They're both equally responsible. The people that are throwing, as I say, the people that are throwing the party are responsible. If there's adults there that are furnishing the alcohol, they're responsible for contributing. And the kids are responsible for consumption because the law prohibits the consumption. It could cost you your driver's license, your driving privileges for a year just having a beer in your hand.
So why are so many people in law enforcement cracking down on marijuana?
Well, essentially, Marie, there's two things that I would suggest on this. Number one, of course, is we've all been indoctrinated. This drug has been against the law for 63 years in this state, you know. And so we're all pretty well indoctrinated to the fact in law enforcement. We've grown up through generations of people telling us that this is wrong, it's against the law, people shouldn't use it, it's bad for you, et cetera, et cetera. So we're conditioned to go out there and arrest people for using it. That's step number one. But I understand from a physiological point of view that marijuana, people have a can very quickly build up a tolerance to marijuana. And so where a certain amount of marijuana may get you high this month, next month it may not get you quite as high, and a year from now it may not get you high at all. You may want to, at that point, consume more marijuana or try something else. If the feeling that you get from smoking marijuana and that's all you're after, and you really enjoy that feeling, and that's all you really want out of it, chances are you'll never go on to any other drug. You know, you'll just use marijuana recreationally, and it's going to be just fine. But most people, it's not. Most people are looking for some high. They're looking for some sensation that they experience within their mind and their body that they're not getting from just normal life. So when they no longer can get that from marijuana, they're going to start looking around for some other substance that'll give them something new, a new thrill or a new rush or a new euphoric feeling. And there's the real danger of it. Now, that's not to say, don't misunderstand me, I would be the last to say that I believe that anybody that smokes a few joints is going to go on to become, a stone junkie later on down the road. I don't think that happens at all. I think that one of the problems that we have is that they've told us, they, meaning the government, law enforcement over the years, that they'll go to an institution and they talk to a bunch of people. Maybe they're in prison, maybe they're in some drug rehab, and they ask them all, well, did you, you know, before you went to heroin and you started robbing banks and killing people, you know, did you smoke marijuana? And the answer is yes, of course they did. They smoked marijuana. And so say, well, there you have it. You know, scientific research. If they smoke marijuana, you're going to end up using heroin, killing people, robbing banks, and going to prison. So I think that that's kind of faulty logic. I don't think that there's any good scientific basis for that. And I think that that's one of the things that's absolutely necessary. I'm very much in favor of reforming marijuana laws. I think that we should do some serious studies, sociological, physiological, and whatnot, to find out just exactly what the effects of smoking marijuana, the dangers, and get a realistic appraisal of what this is all about, and not just going off the age-old premise that, well, it's against the law, and our job is to enforce the law, and we're not going to budge in any direction on this. We should find out about this thing. We should be able to educate people. It goes back to one of the very first questions you asked me about how valuable is education in this issue. We need to educate people, give them good, solid, factual information, and then people can make educated guesses. I would never be in favor of teenagers being able to smoke marijuana or use marijuana. I got to tell you right now. I would feel differently later on in life, just like I'm not in favor of teenagers consuming alcohol. Look at the tobacco. I mean, we've spent millions of dollars, the government has, in advertising about the hazards of tobacco. Gee, you can get throat cancer, liver cancer, all kinds of horrible things can happen to you. That information is in magazines, newspapers. You'd have to have just gotten here from another planet not to realize that, because everybody knows that, you know, and you hear it all the time, yet people continue to smoke. And so you think, well, you know, all we can do is educate people on what's going to happen to them, what the risks are, and if they want to make some educated choices, that's up to them. But I don't think under any circumstances that we should ever make it legal for teenagers to consume either alcohol or marijuana.
Do you think marijuana is more or less dangerous compared to things like alcohol and tobacco?
I don't know. I really don't. I've never used it. I don't know. I mean, the people I've talked to, people who don't use it, and they say absolutely it's horrible. It's a horrible thing. And since they don't know, they don't use it, how do they really know? I talk to people that do use it, and they'll say, oh, no, this is just fine. You know, there's not a problem with it like this. Yet, you know, we find people every now and then, that'll sit through a stoplight or something like that, you know, and it'll change colors two or three times before they move. They're so stoned that they can't get the car in gear, you know. And so, how dangerous is that? It's hard for me to say. So it's an individual thing, you know. But I couldn't give you a value judgment on that, because personally I've never experimented with marijuana.
What effect would marijuana decriminalization have on Mendocino County generally?
That's really hard to say. I mean, are you talking about from a statewide basis or a national basis or what?
With the laws.
You mean if they changed, for example, the state and federal said, okay, any place in the United States it's okay to have marijuana, or that you could go to a liquor store and buy it if you were 21 or something like that?
Yeah. How do you think that would affect?
Well, I think that a lot of people that are making a considerable amount of money growing marijuana won't make as much money. I think the price of marijuana would go down. Probably a lot of the people that are in the get-rich-quick scheme of marijuana would go away. I think that you can go down to Safeway and you can buy, a pound of coffee down there, I suppose, for $3.50 of Brand X coffee. Or, you can go over to Fort Bragg to Thanksgiving over there or some of the other mini roasters. The Montanos family down in Mendocino and Fort Bragg, I'm sorry, in Ukiah, any one of these people that make high quality coffee and pay $8 a pound for it, So, and it's the same thing with marijuana, I mean, if marijuana were decriminalized, I would see that some of the large corporations that are into everything from aspirin tablets to vodka, would be growing this stuff commercially, and they'd be marketing it at a cut rate or a very, very low price, But I think that there's always going to be a market for high-grade marijuana. I think that that you'd find specialty shops throughout the country where people would pay a high price for very high-grade marijuana, such as has been grown here in Mendocino County over the years. So I think there would still be a market for that, but I don't think it would be nearly as valuable as it is now. I personally don't know, and I have no scientific data for this, just a gut feeling. I would doubt very seriously if marijuana were decriminalized or, if you will, quasi-legalized tomorrow, if there'd be any significant increase in the number of people that smoke marijuana. A bunch of people might run out and try it for the first time because, they've never done it because it was against the law, but chances are those people would probably never go ahead and continue to use it. Maybe some people that are currently using it might quit using it. But I don't think you'd see this huge onslaught of people, going out to use some marijuana. A good example might be Prohibition. During Prohibition was in effect for 10 years. Alcohol consumption during that period of time went up 800% in this country. And I don't know that it went up significantly after, continued to rise after Prohibition was repealed. I don't think there was, there's been that big of a change. So I really don't know, but I can just only speculate on that. And I don't think there'd be any significant difference in that.
Under the current laws, how many plants is it legal for people to have from medicinal use?
Okay, well, here again, and under the current laws, there is no current law on that. And that's a situation where the state lawmakers have completely abandoned us on this thing. And it's a big political hot potato. Nobody wants to vote to standardize these laws because they don't want to get labeled. Every one of these people in Sacramento has a political future that they're looking at, and they're thinking, well, they don't want to be labeled as pro-marijuana or pro-drugs or something like that because there's so much character assassination associated with that. So they refuse to deal with the issue at all. We've had to deal with it on a local basis. Norm Vroman and I, Norm's the district attorney, as you know, Norm Vroman and I independently made some campaign promises spontaneously in various areas because we felt it was the right thing to do. And we came together along towards the end of the campaign because we weren't a slate and we weren't together on these things. It was a commonality that we both shared because it's the right thing to do about coming up with a standardized policy so the people in Mendocino County would have some direction. They would know just exactly what the rules were, because there's a lot of people out there, surprisingly enough, that want to play by the rules. But the law says it's okay for them to have marijuana, but it doesn't really give the conditions. So we did some studies on this, and Norm Vroman came up with the plant count. And I know I haven't answered your question. I'm going to in a minute, but I think it's important to know the background on this. As the sheriff, I don't have the authority to say how many plants a person can have. Only the judge actually has that authority. But Norm Vroman, the district attorney, has the discretionary powers to say what he will prosecute and what he will not prosecute. I mean, that's perfectly legal for him to do that. So when we came up with our medicinal marijuana or compassionate marijuana program, that was Norman's responsibility to come up with the amount. Now, the answer to your question is that you can have 12 immature plants or 6 flowering plants for each person that has a card. Now, let's assume that that your next door neighbor is a marijuana patient, has a recommendation from a doctor to have marijuana, but doesn't have the ability to grow marijuana. Your next door neighbor that could then call on the person on the other side of them and say, well, you know how to grow marijuana. How about if I make you my primary caregiver and you can grow the marijuana for me? So the primary caregiver then has this transference of authority to grow those six marijuana plants. Now that primary caregiver, for example, can be the primary caregiver for as many people as they want. But let's say, for the sake of illustration, for 10 people, that means you could grow 60 plants. But in order to have the affirmative defense necessary to keep from getting busted, then that person that's going to grow the 60 plants needs to get proper documentation from those 10 people to establish the fact that they have a legitimate reason to have this marijuana. We put together an identification card program, and it's worked very well so far. But nothing in the law says people have to use that. They can come to the sheriff's office. We've got a process where we can give them an ID card that'll prove that they have the right to have marijuana, so that when we get a report, for example, somebody calls in and says, hey, somebody that lives out there on Branscombe Road is growing marijuana, that we don't just run a search warrant and go out there and bust them. We can check and see if that particular person has, if we've already done a prior investigation to determine that they have a legal right to grow marijuana, in which case we don't mess with them. So those programs, things like that are available to save people from being hassled if they just want to take advantage of them.
Do you think that asset forfeiture laws are fair?
I think that there's a lot of unfair things about asset forfeiture laws. I think basically the asset forfeiture law is fair. I don't think that people should be able to profit from criminal conduct. But I think, you know, I've seen some serious abuses of this, or what I consider to be serious abuses. Small amounts of money, you know, people, even people that grow marijuana sometimes have a legitimate source of money. And so I think that that there needs to be some revisions there. What I see as a solution to the problem is not necessarily the more law enforcement or law enforcement aspect, but I think it's more a holistic approach. So it has to come from every aspect, and it has to start, for the most part, a lot of times it has to start in the homes. The parents have to be able to set an example of, you know, how to get through life without substance, you know, and it's a tough deal because we're human beings. And it's hard to be a human. Easier to be a dog. You can just chase your tail and stuff like that.
I will second that.
See, the problem with DARE, for example, you know, why I had to do away with it is to give you an overview of what I'm confronted with. You know, we have fewer officers right on the street right now than we had 20 years ago. In 1980, we had 54 deputies on the street. We currently have 46. The county population has doubled. Now I've got people that have to wait extended response times for us to send a deputy out to invest a burglary or whatever, you know, coroner's cases, responding to coroner's cases, you know, where some volunteer fireman has to stand by for an hour waiting for us to get a deputy there, you know, because I don't have enough deputies to go around. It's really hard for me to reconcile myself to committing a deputy to the DARE program. You know, when it's, to me, it's really questionable as to how effective the DARE program really is in terms of substance abuse, you know, preventing that sort of thing. If the program started in the fourth to fifth grade or the first grade, and they had little bits of this all the way through school, up through, you know, grade 12, as a health item or whatever, so there was a PE or wherever you would fit that in, government, all the way through school, so it was an ongoing program. It may be more valid, you know, but it can't be something like just say no to drugs. That is not going to cut it. It just isn't going to do it. You know, there has to be more to it than that. And I really don't know what that answer is. Nonetheless, I will go back into a program similar to the DARE program next year. I'm trying to work out the funding for it right now to get somebody into that thing. The reason I say I can go to a program, I can go to somebody that costs half as much as a peace officer, half as much as a sworn officer. I go with a public safety officer at roughly, well, not half as much, roughly, two-thirds of the cost, which is great cost reduction, and they can be just as effective. They don't have to be a sworn police officer in order to put these programs on. I mean, yeah, the student learning objectives are all pre-written. The lesson plans are pre-written. It's all canned. All you have to do is just open up the box and spread it around. So that's what I intend to do, because even though I say it's questionable in my mind as to how effective these programs are, I could easily be wrong, and it could be very effective. I don't know. But it's worth a chance. It's worth a risk.
What roles do you think peers should take in drug education?
I got out of high school, went into the service. When I came back from the service, I found all the party animals, all the guys that were really cool, were out there doing menial labor. And some of the kids that weren't so cool are just now starting to get out of college and were getting the good paying jobs. As time goes on, you look at the kids that weren't quite so cool in high school and whatnot, you know, that now they're pretty well set, you know. And the other ones, the party animals, are still out there busting their backs, you know, trying to eke out a living. So, you know, there's something to be said to you know, your how you control your own destiny. And you got one shot at it. And there's no way in the world, if you go to school stoned, there's no way in the world you're going to learn anything. It's impossible. You just can't do it, you know. So, I mean, you may learn something, but you're not going to learn what you need to get by in life. So going to school clean and sober and staying on top of things, getting a good education will give you the options. And then if you want to be, when you get a good education, if you want to go out and, pardon the expression, be a ditch digger or do nothing, well, that's fine. But you have the option. That's an option. That's your choice. You're not forced to do that because that's all you can do. Where some people that don't have a decent education, they have no choices. They have no options. They're stuck at menial jobs, low-paying jobs, and they're trapped in a cycle of poverty that seems to keep them down and only makes the situation worse for them. So, you know, if I could have one good, solid words of advice to kids, is take all the advantage that you have of getting a good education right now. Get the most out of it. You know, there's a time to party. There's a time to be cool. There's a time to get wild. But now it's not necessarily the best time. There's a time for everything. If you're going to party, do your study hard, get your grades, do all that first, and then party when you don't have studying to do.
Thank you very much, Sheriff Tony Craver.
Well, Maria, it was a thank you for giving me this opportunity to talk and to give you my views on this thing. I hope I haven't been too boring. I know sometimes I have a tendency to drone on a little bit more than I should, but I really thank you, and I thank KZYX for giving me this opportunity.
Thank you very much.